Chapter 27. DeStancy, who had lived just before the Civil Wars, and to whom Captain DeStancy bore a very traceable likeness. This ancestor had a mole on his cheek, black and distinct as a flying cream, and as in the case of the first Lord Amherst's wart, and then Earl of Arlington's nose scar, the painter had faithfully reproduced the defect on canvas. It so happened that the captain had a mole, though not exactly on the same spot of his face, and this made the resemblance still greater. He took infinite trouble with his dress that day, showing an amount of anxiety on the matter which for him was quite abnormal. At last, when fully equipped, he set out with his sister to make the call proposed. Charlotte was rather unhappy at sight of her brother's earnest attempt to make an impression on Paula, but she could say nothing against it, and they proceeded on their way. It was the darkest of November weather, when the days are so short that morning seems to join with evening without the intervention of noon. The sky was lined with low cloud, within whose dense substance tempests were slowly fermenting for the coming days. Even now a windy turbulence troubled the half-naked boughs, and a lonely leaf would occasionally spin downwards to rejoin on the grass the scathed multitude of its comrades which had preceded it in its fall. The river by the pavilion, in the summer so clear and purling, now slid onwards brown and thick and silent, and enlarged to double size. 2. Meanwhile Paula was alone. Of anyone else it would have been said that she must be finding the afternoon rather dreary in the quaint halls not of her forefathers. But of Miss Power it was unsafe to predicate so surely. She walked from room to room in a black velvet dress which gave decision to her outline without depriving it of softness. She occasionally clasped her hands behind her head and looked out of a window, but she more particularly bent her footsteps up and down the long gallery, whereas he had caused a large fire of logs to be kindled, in her endeavor to extend cheerfulness somewhat beyond the precincts of the sitting rooms. The fire glanced up on Paula, and Paula glanced down at the fire, and at the gnarled beech fuel, and at the wood lice which ran out from beneath the bark to the extremity of the logs as the heat approached them. The low-down ruddy light spread over the dark floor like the setting sun over a moor, fluttering on the grotesque countenances of the bright andirons, and touching all the furniture on the underside. She now and then crossed to one of the deep embrasures of the windows, to decipher some sentence from a letter she held in her hand. The daylight would have been more than sufficient for any bystander to discern that the capitals in that letter were of the peculiar semi-Gothic type affected at the time by Somerset and other young architects of his school in their epistolary correspondence. She was very possibly thinking of him, even when not reading his letter, for the expression of softness with which she perused the page was more or less with her when she appeared to examine other things. She walked about for a little time longer, then put away the letter, looked at the clock, and thence returned to the windows, straining her eyes over the landscape without, as she murmured, "I wish Charlotte was not so long coming." As Charlotte continued to keep away, Paula became less reasonable in her desires, and proceeded to wish that Somerset would arrive, then that anybody would come. Then, walking towards the portraits on the wall, she flippantly asked one of those cavaliers to oblige her fancy for company by stepping down from his frame. The temerity of the request led her to prudently withdraw it almost as soon as conceived. Old paintings had been said to play queer tricks in extreme cases, and the shadows this afternoon were funereal enough for anything in the shape of revenge on an intruder who embodied the antagonistic modern spirit to such an extent as she. However, Paula still stood before the picture which had attracted her, and this, by a coincidence common enough in fact, though scarcely credited in chronicles, happened to be that one of the 17th century portraits of which DeStancy had studied the engraved copy at Myrtle Villa the same morning. Whilst she remained before the picture, wondering her favorite wonder, how would she feel if this and its accompanying canvases were pictures of her own ancestors? She was surprised by a light footstep upon the carpet which covered part of the room, and turning quickly she beheld the smiling little figure of Charlotte de Stancy. "What has made you so late?" said Paula. "You are come to stay, of course?" Charlotte said as he had come to stay. "But I have brought somebody with me."
Whom?
My brother happened to be at home, and I have brought him. Miss De Stancy's brother had been so continuously absent from home in India or elsewhere, so little spoken of, and, when spoken of, so truly though unconsciously represented as one whose interests lay wholly outside this antiquated neighborhood, that to Paula he had been a mere nebulosity whom as he had never distinctly outlined. To have him thus cohere into substance at a moment's notice lent him the novelty of a new creation. "Is he in the drawing room?" said Paula in a low voice. "No, he is here. He would follow me. I hope you will forgive him." And then Paula saw emerge into the red beams of the dancing fire, from behind a half-drawn hanging which screened the door, the military gentleman whose acquaintance the reader has already made. "You know the house, doubtless, Captain de Stancy?" said Paula, somewhat shyly, when he had been presented to her. "I have never seen the inside, since I was 3 weeks old," replied the artillery officer gracefully, "and hence my recollections of it are not remarkably distinct. A year or two before I was born, the entail was cut off by my father and grandfather, so that I saw the venerable place only to lose it. At least, I believe that's the truth of the case. But my knowledge of the transaction is not profound, and it is a delicate point on which to question one's father." Paula assented, and looked at the interesting and noble figure of the man whose parents had seemingly righted themselves at the expense of wronging him. "The pictures and furniture were sold about the same time, I think?" said Charlotte. "Yes," murmured De Stancy. "They went in a mad bargain of my father with his visitor, as they sat over their wine. My father sat down as host on that occasion, and arose as guest." He seemed to speak with such a courteous absence of regret for the alienation, that Paula, who was always fearing that the recollection would rise as a painful shadow between herself and the De Stancys, felt reassured by his magnanimity. De Stancy looked with interest round the gallery, seeing which Paula said she would have lights brought in a moment. "No, please not," said De Stancy. "The room and ourselves are of so much more interesting a color by this light." As they moved hither and thither, the various expressions of De Stancy's face made themselves picturesquely visible in the unsteady shine of the blaze. In a short time he had drawn near to the painting of the ancestor whom he so greatly resembled. When her quick eye noted the speck on the face, indicative of inherited traits strongly pronounced, a new and romantic feeling that the De Stancys had stretched out a tentacle from their genealogical tree to seize her by the hand and draw her into their mass, took possession of Paula. As has been said, the De Stancys were a family on whom the hallmark of membership was deeply stamped, and by the present light the representative under the portrait and the representative in the portrait seemed beings not far removed. Paula was continually starting from a reverie and speaking irrelevantly, as if such reflections as those seized hold of her in spite of her natural unconcern. When candles were brought in, Captain De Stancy ardently contrived to make the pictures the theme of conversation. From the nearest they went to the next, whereupon Paula as hostess took up one of the candlesticks and held it aloft to light up the painting. The candlestick being tall and heavy, De Stancy relieved her of it, and taking another candle in the other hand, He imperceptibly slid into the position of exhibitor rather than spectator. Thus he walked in advance holding the two candles on high, his shadow forming a gigantic figure on the neighboring wall, while he recited the particulars of family history pertaining to each portrait that he had learned up with such eager persistence during the previous 24 hours. I have often wondered what could have been the history of this lady, but nobody has ever been able to tell me, apostrophe Paula observed, pointing to a vandyck which represented a beautiful woman wearing curls across her forehead, a square-cut bodice, and a heavy pearl necklace upon the smooth expanse of her neck. I don't think anybody knows, apostrophe Charlotte said. Oh yes, apostrophe replied her brother promptly, seeing with enthusiasm that it was yet another opportunity for making capital of his acquired knowledge, with which he felt himself as inconveniently crammed as a candidate for a government examination. That lady has been largely celebrated under a fancy name, though she is comparatively little known by her own. Her parents were the chief ornaments of the almost irreproachable court of Charles I, and were not more distinguished by their politeness and honor than by the affections and virtues which constitute the great charm of private life. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the stock verbiage of the family memoir was somewhat apparent in this effusion, but it much impressed his listeners. And he went on to point out that from the lady's necklace was suspended a heart-shaped portrait, that of the man who broke his heart by her persistent refusal to encourage his suit. DeStancy then led them a little further, where hung a portrait of the lover, one of his own family, who appeared in full panoply of plate mail, the pommel of his sword standing up under his elbow. The gallant captain then related how this personage of his line wooed the lady fruitlessly. How, after her marriage with another, she and her husband visited the parents of the disappointed lover, the then occupiers of the castle. How, in a fit of desperation at the sight of her, he retired to his room, where he composed some passionate verses, which he wrote with his blood, and after directing them to her, ran himself through the body with his sword. Too late the lady's heart was touched by his devotion. She was ever after a melancholy woman, and wore his portrait despite her husband's prohibition. This, apostrophe continued DeStancy, leading them through the doorway into the hall, where the coats of mail were arranged along the wall, and stopping opposite a suit which bore some resemblance to that of the portrait. This is his armor, as you will perceive, by comparing it with the picture, and this is the sword with which he did the rash deed. Apostrophe, apostrophe, what unreasonable devotion. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Paula practically. It was too romantic of him. She was not worthy of such a sacrifice. Apostrophe, he also is one whom they say you resemble a little in feature, I think, apostrophe, said Charlotte. Do they? Apostrophe, apostrophe, replied DeStancy. I wonder if it's true. Apostrophe, he set down the candles, and asking the girls to withdraw for a moment, was inside the upper part of the suit of armor in incredibly quick time. Going then and placing himself in front of a low-hanging painting near the original, so as to be enclosed by the frame, while covering the figure, arranging the sword as in the one above, and setting the light, that it might fall in the right direction, he recalled them. When he put the question, is the resemblance strong? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he looked so much like a man of bygone times that neither of them replied, but remained curiously gazing at him. His modern and comparatively sallow complexion, as seen through the open visor, lent an ethereal ideality to his appearance which the time-stained countenance of the original warrior totally lacked. At last Paula spoke, so stilly that she seemed a statue enunciating. Are the verses known, that he wrote with his blood? Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh yes, they have been carefully preserved. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Captain DeStancy, with true wooer's instinct, had committed some of them to memory that morning from the printed copy, to be found in every well-ordered library. I fear I don't remember them all, apostrophe, he said, but they begin in this way. Rom one that Diathan is discontent. Dear fair, receive this greeting to thee sent. And still as oft as it is read by thee, then with some deep sad sigh remember me. Oh, 'twas my fortune's error to vow duty to one that bears defiance in her body. Sweet poison, pretious woo, infectious jewel such as a lady that is fair and cruel. How well could I with air, chameleon-like, live happy, and still gazing on thy cheek, in which, forsaken man, methink I see how good thy love doth threaten cares to me. Why dost thou frown thus on a kneeling sowl, whose faults in love thou mayst as well controul? In love but oh, that word I fear, is hateful still both to thy heart and dear. Dot 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 dot, lady, in brief, my fate doth now intend the period of my days to have an end. Waste not on me thy pity, pretious fair. Rest you in much content, I, in despair. Apostrophe apostrophe, a solemn silence followed the close of the recital, which the stancy improved, by turning the point of the sword to his breast, resting the pommel upon the floor, and saying, after writing that we may picture him turning this same sword in this same way, and falling on it thus. Apostrophe apostrophe, he inclined his body forward as he spoke. Don't, Captain de Stancy, please don't. Apostrophe apostrophe, cried Paula involuntarily. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.